arts can greatly affect the development of a city, leading to more civic pride, unity between different ethnic and economic groups, and attract further city growth. So it has been with Ann Arbor. I would like to trace the evolution of various entertainment forms in Ann Arbor and tell you how this city has become a center for the performing arts in the Midwest. The first attempts at bringing music to Ann Arbor were done quite naturally by John Allen, the town's first inhabitant. Although some say he was quite good with his fiddle, more serious musical efforts were offered by some of Ann Arbor's churches, the university, and the large German population with their musical heritage. St. Andrew's Episcopal Church became one of the focal points for musical talent in the late 1800s. Reuben Kempf, one of the town's best-known music lovers of that era, was then director of the St. Andrew's Boys Choir. Kempf, who was born in Michigan, had his training in Stuttgart, Germany, at the conservatory, and then he returned to Ann Arbor to further his musical growth. Kempf realized that there was a wealth of German musical talent in Michigan, so he organized the Peninsular Sängerfest. It was a yearly concert festival by German vocal and instrumental groups formed by German immigrants of the Lower Peninsula. For the seventh year of the festival, 1886, Kempf brought the Sängerfest to Ann Arbor for three muggy days in August. A contemporary of Reuben Kempf and fellow music patron was Henry Simmons Fries. Through his efforts, the University Choral Union was started. But his most important contribution was the birth of the University Musical Society. One night in 1880, February of that year, the society was formed, and Henry Fries was elected its first president. The Musical Society began bringing the Boston Symphony Orchestra to Ann Arbor to end the season of choral union concerts. This practice continued without a name until 1894, when it was dubbed the first annual Ann Arbor May Festival. One of the guiding forces of the Musical Society was Dr. Charles Zink. In all, he was associated with this society for 64 years and was responsible for many decisions that affected what the Ann Arbor audience had listened to. What was it like to be in the position of shaping the musical tastes and habits of a city? I spoke with Mrs. Charles Sink, who worked very closely with her husband and the Musical Society.
Talking this afternoon with Mrs. Charles A. Sink, and we've been graciously invited into her home. Today we're going to talk with her about music in Ann Arbor. Mrs. Sink, thanks so much for welcoming us into your home today. Your husband was certainly associated with music in Ann Arbor, as you were, for a good many years.
Oh, yes. My husband was an officer in music for 64 years. He became associated with the School of Music as secretary when he graduated from the Literary College in 1904. He had specialized in Latin and Greek and expected to make that his field. And so it was quite a surprise to him when he accepted this position.
Did he always have an interest in music, though?
Oh, well, he enjoyed music, but he had no idea of going into music administration. But President Angel, who was president of the university at that time, evidently was quite interested, as were a number of the other members of the board of directors of the Musical Society, to have him become associated. And then he found out many things after he went over there just as a new graduate of the university. He said one of the things he found out first was that they didn't even own the building they were in.
I didn't know that.
Yes, huh. They did not. And so it took a little bit of doing to get that all worked out. But I think people were very generous, people who held bonds on it. And so then the School of Music was owned by the University Musical Society. And, of course, they did many structural changes in it through the years. And now, of course, there is no building on Maynard Street.
Not anymore.
No more. And the lovely one is out on campus.
Now, the Musical Society was responsible for the Choral Union and the May Festival both.
Yes. The Choral Union started in 1879, and it was formed from the choirs from four local churches, and they changed about giving concerts in the various churches. In 1889, Dr. Albert Stanley, who'd been the choir director in Grace Church in Providence, came to Ann Arbor, and he was the man who founded the First May Festival. And the First May Festival was in 1894.
Do you remember which orchestra played for that festival?
My husband told me, of course that was long before his time,
sure,
that it was the Boston Festival Orchestra. I think there was some reason they could not get the Boston Symphony as planned. And I know Charles used to remark to me that the men were certainly far-sighted when they announced the May Festival. They announced it as the first annual May Festival, even before
that
they had
far-sighted.
A festival.
That certainly was.
And my husband had many delightful stories about the beginnings of the May Festival. And of course, all of that is on record. It's written up in various books. And the May Festival, of course, has continued throughout the years, as has the Choral Union.
One of the most significant musical events in the country, without question.
Yes.
My husband served for 41 years as president of the Musical Society.
Yes, he did. He was originally the School of Music, was also under the Musical Society.
That's an administrative responsibility.
Yes, it really was, when you consider the large faculty and the number of students who attended. But in 1940, the School of Music became an integral part of the university, and then the Musical Society still was responsible for the Choral Union and the May Festival and all the other concerts that are given here annually.
Well, you during the years that you stayed right in Ann Arbor, you and your husband.
Yes.
And he began his duties with the Musical Society. I bet during all those years, you certainly have met some fascinating and interesting people.
No doubt about it. It's been a great pleasure, and I just feel humbly grateful, Mr. Trost, that I've had the opportunity to meet and get to know these people.
And entertain them in your home.
Oh, yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Tell us about some of the people that you met over the years. I'm sure our audience would be interested in that.
Well, one of the great artists who's been a guest in our home various times is Arthur Rubinstein.
Oh, sure.
The world-renowned pianist. And he is a hostess delight. He
has. Now, why is that so?
Because he has the most wonderful fund of stories. And one of them you might be interested in. One day he was traveling on a railroad train. He was in having his dinner, and he noticed a woman seated at a table, and she didn't take her eyes off from him, and he would try not to look, but he couldn't keep from it. Finally, she called the steward and said, "Who is that man?" And, of course, he would not tell her, so he just indicated that he played the piano. That was all she needed to know. As she got up to leave, she went to him and said, "My family just adores you. We all like you. We have your records. We never miss your concerts. Now, Mr. Horowitz, may I have your autograph?"
Well, another pianist you had in your home was Paderewski.
Oh, yes. Yes, Paderewski was a very fine artist. As a matter of fact, he felt so strongly about the wonderful Hill Auditorium on campus that one time when he decided rather late to make a concert tour in the United States, my husband had already booked the series completely, and so there was no place for Mr. Paderewski. His New York manager sent his itinerary to his home in Switzerland. He cabled back. These were the words, "What about Ann Arbor?" Because he was disappointed not to play here.
Did you ever keep a record of who visited you here?
Well, we have kept these guest books since, I believe, 1926. I think before that, we did not really keep a guest
book. You have them here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'd like to take a look at them.
Fine, that's great.
Okay.
They're usually tucked away, you know, so they can't be found too readily. And in traveling, they used to always go to the vault.
Well, they're mighty precious. Well, we're going to have an opportunity now to look at some of these guest
books.
See
some of these guest books.
Right, I'd certainly like to do that.
My husband always took great pride in these. Here is UCB Arling. I remember so well the night that he was here, because in the morning my husband received a call saying he's not going to leave at midnight as planned. And my husband said, oh, well, then we'll have him for a party. And his New York manager was quite delighted, because he said war has just broken out, as you know, in the late summer of 39. And his wife is with him, and their two little children are in Europe. So they're really quite distressed. Well, we had them for a party that night, and that's a group of the people that we had, all Scandinavians that I called up and asked to come for that. There's the Messiah. Oh, and here is Dr. Kuzovitsky with the Boston Symphony. He was really a joy. And do you know what he liked to eat?
No, I'm interested in that.
Broiled white fish and boiled macaroni. It sounds so sort
of... Did you find that out ahead of time?
Yes.
No, that was good.
But of course, we dialed it up a bit, you know, so it looked differently. And then he enjoyed other things, too.
Nice.
But he was a great man. Oh, there's Christian Flagstad, who was a terrific singer.
January 15th, 1940.
1940, you see, that's when the war was on. But you, oh, and here's Arthur Rubinstein.
Wow.
And another cute story he told was about one time when he was giving a concert, he was almost thrown off because a woman had brought a little boy to the concert. He was much too young to come to a concert, and he was beating time, but it wasn't Rubinstein.
Oh, boy. Goodness.
Oh, and there's Mr. Ormandy. And we have, oh, and here's Mr. Schnabel. Yes.
Now tell me about him.
Mr. Schnabel, he was a pianist, and he also had master classes in New York. And he was really very, very fine man and a wonderful pianist.
I'm sure as you go through this book, you have an opportunity to renew many memories, huh?
Oh, yes. Well, just think of it. On the seventh book now, there are hundreds of these. And here is some of the Budapest chamber music.
Chamber group.
And the Minneapolis with Metropolis. I recall one time when Metropolis was here, we purposely invited many young men in music who were aspiring to be conductors. And I can still see them now seated on the floor, you know, sort of like getting words of wisdom from the maestro. And they still talk about it. There was one of them who was a guest here last year, and he was speaking again how much he'd enjoyed it. Oh, here's Lawrence Tibbett.
Great singer.
Oh, he was a terrific singer. Yes, it was wonderful. Suzanne Sten. Oh, and here's Heifetz.
What kind of a person was he?
He appears to many people as being very stern.
Yeah, he seems.
But I thought he was perfectly charming. He was so interested in things, you know. Not only musical things, but he was interested. He was here one time during the war, and someone had said something about my activities in the Red Cross, and he had been very active, too.
Well, listen. We could spend hours doing this, and I'd just like to do that, but we're going to... I just opened up the Lily Pond.
Oh, fine, yes. Oh,
goodness,
Lily.
Everywhere I go, I find a distinguished person. But, gee, it's very gracious of you again to show us these books of memories and names and guests.
Well, I'm delighted, Mr. Trost, that you could come this afternoon. I think it's perfectly fine, and I'm sure you have enjoyed your work.
Oh, I've enjoyed
in Ann Arbor, too.
It's good to know that there have been such wonderful people who've come to Ann Arbor, and I think they've probably sensed a little of its charm through the kind of hospitality that was offered here.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
But not all forms of entertainment had the peaceful growth that music had. Such was the case of the circus in Ann Arbor. It had its start, calmly enough, only a decade after the town's founding. By the turn of the century, the Touring Circus Company had its yearly home on the west side of the city. The Big Top was set up just to the west of the railroad tracks between Liberty and Washington streets. Of course, the circus brought enjoyment, much of it. But one year, it also brought some brawls with people trying to crash the gates. Before the volunteer fire department and the city's only policeman could get there in order to come by and break the brawl up, by then, the local rowdies had turned over carnival wagons and they'd let the monkeys and bears loose and destroyed everything in the midway from the popcorn stand to the fat lady's tent. When the circus returned the following year, they were ready for the worst. During the parade, someone, interestingly enough, tossed a firecracker under one of the elephants. And of course, the elephant jumped up, scared out of its wits, and stampeded every other circus animal in the procession. That night, the circus man waited, of course, for the local gang of roughnecks to come by. And they did. But this time, the circus came out on top. Part of the thrill of the circus was just being there and seeing it in person. And such is also the case with the theater, which here in Ann Arbor has flourished for years. I spoke with Mrs. Burnett Stabler, well known for her work with theater in Ann Arbor.
We're talking now with Mrs. Burnett Stabler, and we're going to be talking about theater in Ann Arbor. Thank you very much, Mrs. Stabler, for welcoming us into your home.
Delighted to have you.
Mrs. Stabler, as I understand it, you have served as president of the Ann Arbor Civic Theater and
yes.
a member of the board of directors and have been active in directing plays at the Civic Theater.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us, has Ann Arbor always been a community with interest in theater?
Oh, since its very beginning. It really has. It's, well, we were established, what, in the 1830s, and we hadn't been a town for more than a couple of years when there's a record of some group in town, the Thespian Society, giving a performance of Pissarro. In a place called the E.M. Terry Hall. Nobody knows where that is. But it was one of the big rooms upstairs over one of the hotels, probably downtown, as so many of the later shows were given into.
And this interest then continued to thrive and grow?
And all during the 19th century, we had lots and lots of professional theater in Ann Arbor. First, there were traveling troupes that came, the first one as early as 1844. They gave a lovely combination of plays. Richard III, Shakespeare, of course, and a thing called The Drunkard's Warning. Evidently, the melodramas and Shakespeare were very big in those days. And traveling actors and troupes used to come all during the 19th century. We didn't have a real theater until 1871, when Hill's Grand Opera House was built on Main Street.
On Main Street,
yes,
sure.
Near Catherine.
I saw a picture of it the other day.
Yes, and then things really got going, and many of the biggest stars in the world would come for 2 and 3 night stands. All the famous names you can think of were here: Minnie Mattern Fisk and Modjeska and all the famous names, John Drew and so on, came for many performances. And then there were a lot of local groups that gave performances too. It got if you say, was Ann Arbor interested in theater? Ann Arbor got so interested in theater that by 1899, in the year 1899, there were 95 legitimate plays given in Ann Arbor.
And this attracted not only students and university people, but the townspeople as well.
Oh, yes, this was largely town, not the university.
Oh, that's interesting.
Now, the university, of course, was smaller in those days, and they had dramatic groups. Comedy clubs and this sort of thing. But I'm talking about town theater, which was mostly given downtown. The university finally began giving things in University Hall when that was built. But it wasn't until the 20th century that the university really got going in theater. And of course, they've been going strong ever since.
Yes, indeed. Well, as the university got involved, then the opportunities for people to experience the theater began to grow. There was not only
yes.
the community to watch it. What kind of lead did the university take in terms of theater? Or what did it build on? really, I should
say. Well, there was quite a doldrum in town in the first 10 years of the century because the Opera House, Hill's Opera House, which in its latter years became the Athens Theater, finally closed in 1904, and there was no theater
in town.
In 1908, it reopened on the same site as the new Whitney Theater, and this theater was in existence for many years. I saw performances at the Whitney Theater when I was a freshman in the university, around 1930. And I think the play production department of the university was established in 1916, and this was the real beginning of the university's major interest in theater. This was given a tremendous boost in 1928 when Valentine Wint, an extraordinary man, came to Ann Arbor to head the university play production department. He was here for a number of years. He built the department so that the plays they gave were excellent. And then, of course, in 1929, Lydia Mendelssohn Theater opened, and both university productions and town productions were given there. About that same time, we saw the beginning of the spring drama season, which brought professional theater again to Ann Arbor, performing in Lydia Mendelssohn. There would be a 5 or 6 week season every spring where the top stars in the country would come and perform five or six shows for a week each time.
Well, we've certainly had a long history then of professional theater in Ann Arbor.
Yes.
Tell me, how did the Civic Theater, Ann Arbor Civic Theater as we know it today, get started?
Well, it's 43 years old.
It's 43.
It's an old organization as these things go, and this was a group, such as many of the groups that there had been earlier, of citizens, of people in town, often including many university people, of course, because that's part of the town, to have fun giving plays for their friends. Well, it's grown over the years until now. Everybody comes to see Civic Theater plays. They're very, very good.
Were the plays originally performed in Lydia Mendelssohn, or was there another theater?
No, they gave them in the high schools and in various smaller halls. And but we've been giving our plays in Lydia Mendelssohn pretty much for the last, quite a few years now.
Well, bearing in mind how closely you have worked with the Civic Theater, as you look back just to that group, are there particularly memorable performances that stand out in your mind, or
in
plays?
Civic Theater?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay, why don't you tell us about
some? Well, I think the first one that I ever saw Civic Theater do, 15, 20 years ago, before I joined it, was a performance of Major Barbara.
Oh, yes.
And beautifully done. And then later one of Arthur Miller's All My Sons.
Sure.
Yes, which was a beautiful production. And it was those things that sold me on participating in Civic Theater. I decided this was a group that was interested not just in being a little social club that gave plays for fun, but were interested really in doing the very best job that amateurs can do. And this is what they do.
And acting, directing, performing, crewing, and so on. The people that participate in that are members of the Ann Arbor community, not just the university community.
Oh, my, we have school teachers and secretaries and firemen and policemen. Just about all kinds of people and all kinds of occupations participate in Civic Theater. I'm just amazed that many of the men, and particularly the women, many of whom have full-time jobs all day and families to take care of, and then they come down there night after night and build scenery and costumes and act and direct and so on, and put on really very good performances.
Have you had an opportunity to be the Power Center yourself?
Oh, yes. I have not acted in the Power Center myself or directed there, but of course I've seen many productions there. This is a great lift, and Ann Arbor was really needing the Power Center. We were ready for it. We were bursting at the seams in Lydia Mendelssohn and the True Blood Theater and the high school auditoriums. There just wasn't room enough.
Yes, I know. I've been to some plays where they're very, very, very crowded.
Yes.
The professional theater in Ann Arbor has been a help, you know, to students in some ways, insofar as they get an opportunity to see how some of the best directors and best performers
and work with them in some cases.
That's right.
There have been Ever since the spring drama season, which, as I say, started in 1929, it went on with a brief interlude in World War II, then it went on into about 1950. That finally died because it wasn't economic anymore. It wasn't that people didn't want to see the professional plays. But after that, a number of us have been interested in seeing that we could keep professional theater going in Ann Arbor. There were two interesting little movements in the 1950s. There was the Arts Theater Club, a little equity company, followed, well, it lived for 3 years and did some very exciting things in a loft downtown. Then there was the Dramatic Arts Center, which followed it for another 3 years. I was involved in that one, acted in some plays, and helped with the management of it. This again lasted 3 years, a little professional company in the old Masonic Temple, which became an arena theater. But we soon discovered that the only way that Ann Arbor was going to maintain professional theater was to have it connected with the university. Nice. So that when the professional theater program started, this was the direction we felt Ann Arbor needed to go as far as professional theater was concerned. Mm-hmm. And of course, professional theater groups, the PTP is an excellent organization now bringing us all kinds of good professional theater. They work with civic theater. We cooperate in a great many ways. Because I've always felt that theater is all of a piece. People say, well, don't you compete, you different theater groups, for audiences? Well, of course we do to some extent. But, for example, last weekend, the professional theater, or the university players, were doing a big thing with a professional star there. They sold out their houses for Cyrano de Bergerac at that Power Center. At the same time, over at Lydia Mendelssohn, Civic Theater was playing Ernest in Love, a little delightful little musical based on the old play, The Importance of Being Earnest. I directed that show. We had excellent audiences, too, even though there were also big things going on at Hill Auditorium in the musical field. So theater is a piece. If you develop theater audiences in a town, they want to see all kinds of theater, and they support all kinds of good theater.
Well, thanks so much, Mrs. Tabor, for talking with us about theater in Ann Arbor and for giving us just a little background about the foundations upon which theater has grown in Ann Arbor. Appreciate your talking with us.
And be happy.
I certainly feel theater in the future is in good hands.
Legitimate theater, musical performances, the circus, these are just a few of the cultural and entertainment events to come to Ann Arbor. But not the only ones. Ann Arbor has had its share of almost every kind of entertainment. Unfortunately, we can't look at everything, but there's more to come. So join us next week when we'll look at more of Ann Arbor's Playbill. See you then.